Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show.
If y'all ready, give me a hell yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Always a pleasure. We have the Bulls and the Knicks.
It was a really, really loud play. You know, I think everybody saw that.
A lot of things happened. Speaking of a lot of things happening, ladies and gentlemen, this that has been making the rounds on the old internets.
Is this the Bulls season in a nutshell?
Hey, go ahead and run it.
Rusev has never stopped moving. That's a steal from Drummond. Andre Drummond knocked it free. And Torrey Craig!
Shaq to the fool. Oh, my goodness.
Shaq immediately.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, wow. That's a timeout. Oh, my goodness. Wow.
I don't care really who he was throwing the ball to. You know what I mean? It just did. We don't even need to be doing that.
Thunderingly to the rim. And he threw it off the window in a missed dunk with Drummond and Craig. Torrey Craig tried to be a little bit fancy, in fact, a lot fancy, and Billy Donovan is hot. He has every right to be. That was a senseless play on the part of the Bulls.
You know, and again, I'm not going to get into everything I said on the bench, but that's not what I'm about. It's not about what we should be about.
Craig off the glass. Oh, and he missed a jam. Hot dog.
Right there.
Oh, man. Okay, we don't need to see it anymore. Put that away.
Yeah, oh, it's tough to see. Turn away if you're squeamish.
I think he knew that wasn't the right play at the right moment at the right time.
That was unbelievable with Torrey Craig.
There's a couple of players said to me in the timeout, we need to move on right now. So, and they were right.
If that wasn't the most emblematic possession of the Bulls season, I don't know what is.
Wow, bro.
Just got a fast break, just wanted to create some excitement, try to give us the edge.
I don't want to hear it.
Now that's it. That's all I got to say. Breaking into the first of the show.
One, two, three.
And here we go.
Here we go.
Here we go, Jim.
Here we go, Tony.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show. Afternoons from 2 to 6 on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Well, that about sums it up. No transition today. Bernstein, Holmes, and Rahimi off to beautiful Circa Resort and Casino
Whatever.
In Las Vegas.
Whatever.
We're here, and we get to talk about Torrey Craig and Andre Drummond.
I thought, Danny, that Torrey Craig, much like Chris Tannehill for us, was one of the adults in the room, you know? It's a 33-year-old NBA lifer, 3-and-D, a responsible player. And there he is turning that into ya-ya time. And I love how Billy Donovan just absolutely unleashed on the whole team for more plays than that one. But with that one as the highlight, Billy just let him have it. During the game, in the moment, and after the game. And I was like,
yeah,
where's that?
Conversations.
Yes. We could have a hard conversation, Coach, because what I was thinking about when I heard him post-game speaks, it was like he said, you know, I'm not going to share everything I said in the huddle. Like, I think I know.
What the F is wrong with you?
Yeah, what the F is wrong with you? You didn't seem pleased. But I would imagine the message would be, who do you think you are?
Exactly. Exactly. At 33 years old, you should realize what kind of season you're having, what kind of team you're on, and all of that. You know who else gets it, by the way? And you heard him post game? Kobe White, man. That dude.
He's an old soul.
Isn't he? He really is. We did some really dumb stuff. Everybody, not just T. Craig. And he knows how to point the thumb, too, Kobe White, whether he should or not. His body language in the moment, too. I don't know if you've seen the baseline angle.
Yeah.
Of, I mean, you've probably seen every angle.
Yeah,
at this point.
Are you kidding? I have a phone. This is the first time the Bulls have made the group chat in months.
Oh, God, that's so sad.
So sad, dude.
Yeah, you're right. Like I read Good Morning Basketball, Tom Ziller's newsletter. I just absolutely love it. And I actually like lobbied him to write about DeMar like a month ago or something. I'm like, hey, man, love your stuff. You know, it's pretty interesting what's happening here. But he barely ever mentions the Bulls except this one, front and center.
Yeah,
like you're talking about.
It's got to be. So there were so many things about it. Like the number one thing to me was, who do you think you are? But not just Torrey Craig. Like, to me, that is what the reason why Will Perdue immediately emblematic of the Bulls season. Adam Amin, is there any one play that sums up the Bulls season more? They're not mouthpieces, but this is the team broadcast. They're on the network, and I give them a ton of credit for that type of biting criticism. But it's because this outdated sense of accomplishment of being mediocre permeates the whole experience. I think an under-discussed part of this is the score of the game.
At that time?
They're down 9.
He was trying to create some excitement.
They're down 9.
Torrey said.
They're not up 25. It's not the fourth quarter. This isn't 2 minutes left in a game that you're winning by 16. You're down 9. Like, nothing has been accomplished this year. There is no congratulations on your pre-order link for your play-in game tickets that went live because you've locked that up. It's offensive to your basketball sensibilities that anyone on the team would think that the whole thing was okay. It's stupid.
They still have to lock up home court advantage, right? For the 9-10 game, I think they've got a magic number of 2.
You can order the tickets, but you're not guaranteed to get them. Obviously, no. If they fall to the 10 spot, yeah.
But yeah, it's all a problem, Danny. I mean, the Kobe White reaction on that baseline shot is glorious because Kobe has grown up and shown what he is as a player and as a dude, and he's the one throwing his arms up like, really, this is us right now. This is what we're choosing to do. And then, I mean, look, if Drummond doesn't get hurt on the other end of the floor 20 seconds later, it's not quite as emblematic. It doesn't penetrate the zeitgeist quite as much because punctuating the idiocy with Andre Drummond in a wheelchair is like, it's like, that's just, you're not supposed to lose somebody who's been decent and been kind of fun. In that way, it's just adding the injury to the absurdity. I got to say, I can understand why Drummond is jumping up and trying to get the ball. Like, that's just,
well,
that's what he does. That's like, that's his move in the basketball world.
He rebounds. It's a rebounder. He's like, Torrey Craig missed. He tried to rebound. Of course I understand it. What do you mean? What do you mean? Of course. Yeah, I understand what Drummond's doing.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, "Hey, ball's up in the air. I should go get that. I should go get that. That's what I do.
My existence is to get the ball that is amiss. This should not be amiss. Yeah. I don't know why we're throwing it at the backboard from 25 feet.
I'd love to know what his thought process is in that moment. What a terrible shot by Torrey. I wonder what happened there.
Guess I got to clean up another miss. This is what I do. This is why I'm here. I'm the best rebounder of all time.
I mean, unless he was the, oh, that's for me. That's for me. Yeah, I know what to do with that. I know what to do with that. You can't possibly be doing that for yourself. That wouldn't be something you would do. Unreal.
I mean, but it's funny. Like, that's where the Bulls, unfortunately, have been relegated to, this ability to, okay, the vast majority of people were not watching it live and were not locked into it. But my guess is, if people in your life know that you're a Bulls fan, that's what brought the Bulls back into your consciousness. Because we've had a few moments of it this year. I mean, Coby White had that amazing stretch. That was fun and exciting. Io had the amazing stretch. That was fun and exciting. DeMar's professionalism. We talked about how we've somehow gone from underappreciating him to even underrating him. That was a positive thing.
Yes.
How bad all of the big picture macro stuff was, the trade deadline. Like, we've had these touch point moments, but when you get to these, like, the dog days of the season and baseball started up and the draft is a couple of weeks away and your attention is really split, it's hard. We'll lock back in for the play-in game. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, as like a collective fan base. And then something like that is what's going to get the masses talking. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, no, it really is. It really is, because there have been moments where you're like, oh, there's some people giving you something to have a little mild optimism about, like you're talking. I mean, even last night, Kobe broke Zach's record for most three-pointers in a season.
Yeah.
Last night. I mean, Kobe's had a pretty darn remarkable year. And still has a shot for most improved, because some people are like that Tyrese Maxey was also already pretty good. So Kobe might actually get that. But man, I love Jalen Brunson. I admire his game and his effort and everything. So it was nice to like get to watch that a little bit. But in terms of the Bulls overall year, yeah, this is this,
oh, no!
Oh, no.
Kobe White, by the way, the second favorite for most improved player, but it's 7-1. Tyrese Maxey is, you'd have to bet $1,350 to win 100. So he is a massive favorite for the award.
Yeah, but it's interesting because Maxey, some people think that Maxey's candidacy is fraudulent because he was too good. And if
I am
any
one
voters,
of those people. I would be one of those people. But it's really poorly defined. We've seen this before of like, oh, Ja Morant's a candidate for most improved player. That's ridiculous, you know. So, it is a poorly defined award. So I do think Maxey will probably win, but I think that Coby White is more in the spirit of the award.
Man, Stacey, knowing that you're locked in for Shaqt in a Fool. I mean,
instantly. I mean, whatever. Instant Shaqt and a Fool.
Does the segment "Come On, Man" still exist? That was a football thing for Chris Carter and Keyshawn, right? Yeah, that's probably gone.
No, that's the answer to it. Basketball's "Come On, Man" is Shaqt and a Fool, and it's permeated the lexicon of the league. And
all right, so
in real time,
we got that going for us. But yeah, Bulls did not take center stage. Before or after those moments last night. I mean, I a little bit before, but man, once the Cubs got going, I have the fever. I have the fever for relevant, interesting baseball managed by a smart dude. And after our conversations yesterday, kind of breaking it all down, I could not wait to see how the Cubs would handle things if they got a lead, and indeed they did. Watch.
They did. It was a much more interesting watch than the Bulls, and we'll get to it. But let's wrap up the Bulls thing with Billy Donovan, because this hopefully will put to rest the Kentucky speculation, because the easiest joke to make was basically
push him.
Yeah, maybe he'll reconsider Kentucky after Torrey Craig does what he did.
I'll just say this. Obviously, I spent, you know, 5 years, my first 5 years in coaching, you know, when Coach Pitino gave me a job. Two kids were born there. I think, like at all my stops, you know, you have very, very fond memories. I have not been contacted by any. I haven't spoken to anybody. My total commitment and focus is here to this team and to this group. I think with what we've been through, you know, this year and the way we started, we've talked about it. I give our guys a lot of credit for hanging in there and battling through some of the things they had to battle through, and I'm with them on that. and I'm committed to them with that. So, you know, again, a lot of this stuff I think sometimes turns out to be speculation, but I have not had any contact with anybody, and my commitment's here.
How would you react if you were contacted?
I would still say the same thing I said. I'm committed to being here, you know, with this group and trying to help these guys as best we can to close out this year and try to, you know, get a home court and a play-in and try to advance.
Billy, you've talked about the college game and how it's changed, especially the last 5 years.
Right.
Your relationship with Arturis, Mark, you talked about that as well. How much of the environment, the landscape of all of that would play into where you're just like, you know what, I'm an NBA coach, I'm happy at the NBA level, you know, not that you couldn't coach college.
Right.
But at the same time, it's changed so much, why would you want to go back and do it at this point, especially when you feel like you accomplished what you accomplished then?
Yeah, I mean, I've always, you know, I think a lot of times, you know, people, you know, speculate, you know, why you would leave college and go to the NBA, and there was a lot out there, like I didn't like recruiting. The hard part in recruiting is, and I actually enjoyed the recruiting. The hard part in recruiting was a lot of times you didn't have anything to show for it, right? Because it's like no prizes for second place. There's no prize for second place. So that part of it's hard, especially when you invest a lot of time. I've always been, I think, at my age, more consumed and concerned about who I'm working with and who I'm working for, you know? And I've just been around a lot of NBA people, you know, going back to when I first got hired at Kentucky. You know, Coach Pitino, NBA. Ralph Will was an assistant coach, NBA. Being with the Knicks, very, very close to Carlisle. Jeff Van Gundy coached me in college. You know, Stan Van Gundy, very, very close to. When I was in Florida, Spoelstra used to come during the lockout, watch practice, spoke with them. Steve Clifford. So I've been around that, you know, in terms of a lot of those guys. And I've always had, you know, a feeling that I would like to coach, you know, in the NBA, you know, and that's really, really what it came down to. So I'm happy here at this level and stuff like that. But I've also, you know, understand too that like in this profession, you know, sometimes things don't work out at a particular place or things change, you know, and I know I enjoy coaching and I know I enjoy coaching in the NBA. The thing that I don't love for the game is I think when the players can just jump around the way they jump around. I just don't think it's good for them. And I think if there'd be something that they could put in place where the players could be compensated and also understand the responsibility there, you know. And like I said, I know coaches jump around, so I don't want to sound like I'm trying to be hypocritical here. Like it's not right for the players, it's right for the coaches. The thing I constantly hear is it's sometimes hard to build a program because the volatility of the roster. You know what I mean? It's just constantly turning over every year.
That is a man who is staying in the NBA.
Yeah.
He's not going to say no because Kentucky pays like an NBA job, so it's good leverage. And we don't know how long Billy Donovan will be the coach of the Bulls and if he would get yet another NBA job after that and if he wants to continue coaching. Like, I don't know if Billy Donovan wants to coach into his 70s, right? I don't know the answer to that question. If he does, he probably has to keep college open as an opportunity. But he ain't leaving the Bulls for Kentucky, man. Not happening.
Yeah, no, and you were on that yesterday. You know, I didn't bring it up yesterday, but I found myself thinking about it as I read the quotes from yesterday in the pregame there. And obviously now, his dalliance with the Orlando Magic. I don't know how many of our listeners may not even remember that he signed a big contract in 2007.
Yeah.
After back-to-back titles of Florida, signed a big contract with the Magic, had an introductory press conference, said hello, and within the next couple of days, changed his mind and went back to Florida. Ended up apologizing to many, many people about having made his move before he was really ready. So he's always, as he said there, wanted the NBA, thought about the NBA, and now that he's gotten there and achieved it, you know, after having that dalliance and put his toe in the water and changed his mind, it was kind of an embarrassing moment in the man's career. But he went back, and I think the deal was he wasn't allowed to go back to the NBA for another 5 years. That's how the Magic let him out of his deal. So he's lived in both worlds and waffled back and forth once. And I think as you called yesterday, and we hear it there in his voice, He has found his place. He's found his spot, and he's not going anywhere in terms of league to college.
Well, it's weird. Over the last few years, I feel like I've become very well-sourced in coaching and management of basketball. Pipeline to the Pros out April 16th. You could order it now. Jeff,
by the way, I saw Fran Fraschilla giving that some love today. That's an awesome endorsement. Yeah. Fran's great.
Yeah, that was really, really, really cool. Thank you for that. Jeff Van Gundy, Stan Van Gundy, Steve Clifford, Rick Pitino. Talk to all of them for the book. So they all, like, oh, you're in Chicago? Talk to all of them about Billy Donovan.
Sure.
But like, that's not in the book because he's not a D3 guy. But I can talk to all of those guys about Billy Donovan. And I can't speak to every single person that I talk to, pro and college. I don't want to pretend like I know all of them that well. But we did just over 100 interviews for the book. Not every one of them is a coach. Some are executives. Some are secondary sources or whatever. But, like, I got the sense that if all of them were offered great college jobs and all of them were offered a pro job, 90% would take the pro job. There are very few coaches left who prefer college to the NBA because of the ecosystem and how sure. It is, and the money, the travel, the accommodations, the tech caliber of the player, all of that stuff. It's not that coaching in college isn't a great job and a great way to make a ton of money, but back in the day, it used to be a little closer. I think that it would be a very rare person who would say that they would prefer college to the NBA based on how it's set up right now.
I think that makes all the sense in the world. I love that we have Billy in this town. I wish the Bulls were better and more relevant. And he's part of that because he seems to be an accomplice to the willing mediocrity or the willing competitiveness. And you can't excuse him from that in terms of front office, moves or lack thereof, because he's clearly a partner with the front office. But man, he's got the gravitas and the pelts on the wall to be as vocal as he wants to be. And as you know, and so I love moments like that last night where he speaks the truth about the game afterwards and speaks the truth about the industry and his career beforehand. Those are important moments to document for a guy like that.
Booger McFarland is our guest on Polls Position today to weigh in on what he thinks the best case scenario is for the Bears with the 9th overall pick to pair with Caleb Williams. But also, he's an expert on LSU. So we'll be talking Malik Nabers, Brian Thomas Jr., Jaden Daniels, who made who better, all that stuff with Polls Position at 3 o'clock. We have a release on how long Yoan Moncada is going to be out. We can get to that. Plus, yes, the Cubs game. Bouncing back with the win. Fascinating start to finish. Parkinson Spiegel on the score.
The Parkinson Spiegel Show.
I am actually doing a radio show with Parkinson Spiegel, and I wasn't particularly good. I mean, not that that's a new thing.
Afternoons on the score.
1-2, swing and a miss, strike three. Ben Brown gets the strikeout.
Here comes the 2-2. Swing and a miss, strike three. Got him with the fastball, one away.
Swing and a miss, strike three. Good job by Ben Brown to strike out Jurickson Profar.
By watching Ben Brown today, I think they have something special in this kid.
Yeah, that was a very, very cool endorsement. Of course, Pat Hughes is the first voice you hear. You know the voice of that Hall of Famer. You should know the voice of the other Hall of Famer saying that the Cubs have something special in Ben Brown. That's Pedro Martinez.
By yes, watching sir. Ben Brown today, I think they have something special in this kid.
Pedro Martinez, Danny, is maybe the smartest guy talking pitching alive right now.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, no, I mean, talking to better. I think
Steve Stone. Talk to him Friday, right?
Stoney's great.
Yeah,
Stoney is great.
Danny,
right? Yeah,
Danny's really good. Shane,
did you see my? That's my mound.
And he's trying this year. I don't know if you guys noticed that.
Oh, yeah. But actually, how about Ron Darling?
Look, there's a lot of good ones. There's a lot of good ones. I'm just telling you, of the people that I've talked to who've gotten a chance to talk to Pedro a lot, I mean, my goodness. I think the guy's a freaking marvel. And he might have been the smartest pitcher at the time as well. Just did an interview with Joe Castiglione, the Red Sox broadcaster who's going into the Hall of Fame this year, and he's been doing Red Sox games since the 80s. He says Pedro's the smartest player of any kind he's ever been around. And it's like, so I just put a lot of weight on that dude. So that I agree, that's an incredibly cool endorsement of the Cubs' young pitcher, who said himself that last night was like a coronation. He didn't say coronation. He said like a confirmation of what he needed to believe about himself to get that first start and go 4 2/3.
And it is going to be very easy to say, well, what's he going to be? Is he going to be a closer? Is he going to be a starter? What's he going to be on this team? What's he going to be in 2 months? I think all of those things are on the table, and I think there's a chance that what he is in 2 years is not what he ends up being this year. Like, I think that if Steele comes back and Tyone comes back and they have decent health and production from Wicks and Hendricks and the rest of the rotation, I think there's a real chance that Ben Brown is a relief pitcher this year, but that doesn't mean that he can't be a starter going forward.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good moment to think about it and talk about it, because you saw Michael Kopech throw two dominant innings for the White Sox, hitting 102. At one point he threw 12 straight fastballs. And it's like, you got to learn these guys' makeup and what they can actually handle and do. And these arms can be used in a number of ways early and in a number of ways long term. But if he's got the makeup for a starter and he can do some of the things like last night, he said he lost control of the fastball a little bit in the third inning, and he was able to make some adjustments and power through. Like, that's the kind of stuff that screams, oh, that's so starter. Okay, great. So we can figure out that. How many times do we watch a guy like Kopech or anybody else on either team have a moment where it left them and they gave up a huge inning and the ball game was out of reach? That didn't happen. So that's the kind of stuff a manager's got to read as he's figuring out what a role is for a guy long term.
Yeah, and obviously starter more valuable than reliever, but if you have enough starters this year,
sure,
him at max velocity for a shorter amount of time,
yeah,
I mean, that stuff in the bullpen, I mean, obviously would play more than anyone else, way better than Alzolay and Neris and that sort of thing. Like, if he can go 97, 98 and take it up to 100 because he's only going to throw 20 pitches or something like that.
You bet.
The possibilities feel endless for this season.
Well, yeah. I mean, that was the plan for him last year. If he didn't get hurt, they were going to bring him up and throw him in the pen in September. And history is littered with guys like Adam Wainwright, closer early, and then lifetime starter, David Price, reliever early, right? So, yeah, no, you're absolutely right, man. And Javier Assad could be the bulk guy in the bullpen that you need, but right now he's a starter. So some of these roles are definitely going to churn a little bit. By the way, I mentioned 4 2/3. Don't you love it? It's at least the second time. He did it with Wicks. And now he did it with Brown. He doesn't give a crap, does Craig Counsell, about your win stat. Really?
No.
Just and of course, he shouldn't. And the win as a stat ought to be rejiggered, where I think I'm with Len Casper's idea from way back when, that the official scores should just hand it out, because that should be Ben Brown's win last night. You know, like that the way that we do that ought to change a little bit. That's a broader philosophical conversation.
Right. But Drew Smyly gets the win, but he allows an earned run and gets 4 outs. And Ben Brown gets 14 outs, doesn't allow an earned run, and doesn't get the win.
The argument that Bernstein made today, though, was that if you're handing them out, Christopher Morel should get the win. Because he gave them 4 runs.
Yeah.
Sure.
It should be an every player thing, not just a pitcher thing.
It should just not be an individual stat.
It should not be a stat.
Yeah.
A win
is a team thing, and you can remove it. I know, Speaks, you'd say baseball history and numbers and all that stuff matters.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. I think they do for context and stuff. But I hear you. This stuff does progress. And things will change. I mean, we'll never see another 300-game winner. You know,
no.
I mean, and so using certain things like that as a benchmark for true greatness are gone. And even, you know, romanticists or traditionalists like me can let that go. I do wonder certain managers, obviously Tony cared, you know, Tony has had moments where he cared. Didn't he say it? Did he say it like 2 years ago, Tony, that he was worried about the win at one point?
Is that what he said?
Yeah, I don't know.
He doesn't know what he said.
Nobody does at this point.
Yeah.
But anyway.
And comparing, like, hey, you know, Craig Counsell, he's a real new age manager. He's real smart. He's doing something that Tony La Russa isn't doing. It's like, okay,
we can do better. But we talked even yesterday about the sense of loyalty that David Ross had for certain guys. And I'm not saying he would have leaned more towards the win, but Craig just doesn't care about that and any of that stuff and has set that up with the whole thing. Interesting to see the way the bullpen played out after our long form conversation yesterday. Don't you think? See who the even or ahead guys were in Council's mind, at least for one night. I liked that he was aggressive with some of the choices.
Yeah, we were on it with the exception of Almonte.
Yeah.
We didn't see that coming, and I got to be honest, he was great. He was no trouble, two strikeouts, one clean inning. He was great. I wonder if that had anything to do with how much that had to do with specific matchups, or if that was in the pregame plan.
Yeah, well, I would figure it's in the pregame plan. These are my first couple of guys, or these are the three or four guys I want to get to. Adbert again at the end. Leiter has been great. Mark Leiter Jr. is 6 2/3 scoreless. I saw this stat that he's one of only four pitchers in the National League who've pitched in six games or more who haven't allowed a run. So he's been great so far in the small sample, and he's a organizational creation with the pitch lab and an absolute weapon against lefties. But yes, Almonte was a surprise as recently as 3 days ago. People were talking about, are they going to send him down? What are we going to do? Because he was clearly outside of the circle of trust. I thought maybe it'd be Palencia, but that's a quick run for him back in the circle of trust, even a quicker run. So,
it's not like it was the bottom of the order. They had a few run lead, so it was comfortable, but he starts with Machado.
Absolutely. It was the absolute heart of the order. That was his first righty of choice against the heart of the order last night. I think that's interesting. And whether it was just for one night or whether that was a Neris role because that wasn't doable because of the health or the arm, I don't know. But it was interesting to see Almonte get a chance, and I liked it. I kind of wanted to see another inning. That's me. I'm going to be the guy who keeps wanting to see multiple innings. If somebody looks good, let him stay. And don't just expect that three or four more guys are all going to be okay too.
Well, I'm not going to be here, unfortunately. I'm off Friday, and with the off day, Council is joining us on Friday instead of tomorrow, so I won't get to talk to him. But it'd be interesting to ask him about that because he would probably say something along the lines of it's case by case and it's guy by guy. But asking him just generally his philosophy on trying to use fewer relievers for multiple innings or more relievers to keep them fresh with maximum effort would be an interesting thing to see how he would globally address that.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely something that I will make sure we deal with on Friday. And some of that is based on who you have available. If Assad were out there, maybe if it's Assad in that spot, he absolutely goes two or maybe even three.
Yeah.
Smiley is basically your only potential bulk guy out there in terms of two or three innings. And if you don't feel great about Luke Little, you might not want to burn Smiley too much because Leiter is your other guy against lefties. He doesn't have many options for that bulk role that we thought that they might use. When I saw Smiley, I'm like, oh, it's interesting. 4 2/3 for Brown. Maybe Smiley gets to go at least two or at least three. But as you said, as soon as the righties came back around, that top with Machado, here came Almonte. Did a nice job.
So it's such a bummer. Injuries suck. Yoan Moncada's out 3 to 6 months.
Oh, dude, I hadn't seen that yet. In the final year of a contract that has to be described as an absolute failure. Oh.
Yeah, but
that's brutal.
Yes, of course the contract he has not lived up to it. He's crazy talented. Injuries are a part of sports. It's brutal. But it is going to be very interesting to see how much heat the White Sox take for this.
Because he was dealing with hip soreness, and that's the area that he hurt, huh?
Yeah. He'd been playing. They said been dealing with it for 3 or 4 days. He had stolen a base the night before. So, I mean, he had been productive. But Grifols 2 days ago had said he doesn't expect the injury to keep Moncada out of the lineup. He said he had been a good job maintaining it. And then now he's out for maybe the season. I assume Moncada was doing what he was doing, how he wanted to do it. But that's the exact type of scenario we were asking, like, how it gets worse. If they felt like a star player, relatively, wasn't treated well or with maximum care.
Oh, God.
You know what I mean? Like, maybe everything is totally fine, but when they're like, oh, yeah, he's dealing with a nagging hip adductor injury, he's playing through it, he'll be able to maintain.
Uh-huh.
And then the next day, he injures it and is out for the year? That's a horrible look.
I have to laugh. I jump on the chance to hammer them when they deserve it. I genuinely try to be fair about this stuff. Maybe I'm wrong, but on this one, I'm not. He's had nagging injuries for 60 to 75% of his entire career. And at this point in the final year of his deal, when you're 1-9, play like that. That's my reaction. That was my reaction to hearing that news. Like, I can't hate on them for overall handling of this. I can question the training staff and overall why adductors keep getting hurt in general.
Yeah.
I can also question you on Moncada's personal work ethic. You know, when is it on the player? His personal work ethic has been on display as substandard for a while. And at different times, and nightlife proclivities and such. I don't put this one on the institution in terms of the specific injury.
I just think that there's variables here that we don't know. I'm not ready to make a determination on that yet, but the tea leaves don't look great to me. Booger McFarland in 20 minutes. Morrell continues to rake. Parkinson Spiegel on the score.
The Parkinson Spiegel Show.
Are you kidding me? Tune in to Twitch.
Afternoons on the score.
Here's the pitch. High fly ball, hit to deep left center field. Forget about it. Long gone. A grand slam home run. Christopher Morrell.
So damn good. So damn fun. Third base, DH, whatever, man. Just get the stick in the lineup. He's hitting 326.
Yeah.
Three homers, 10 driven in, 10 scored. I mean,
I think he's 15th in contact rate in MLB. This is not your father's Christopher Morrell this year, is it?
No, and again, sample. I understand all of that. A 974 OPS, a 161 OPS plus.
Yeah, man.
I mean, he only has two more strikeouts than walks.
Well, that's the thing.
It's crazy.
It's what's happening. And, like, we kind of talked about it a little bit with Nico. I tried to go there a little bit with Nico, but Jordan Bastion had run the numbers at MLB.com, and then Marquis did it last night in a different way, but showing you the chase rate going down for Morrell. The way Bastion wrote it up was O swing percentage, which is your, you know, swinging at pitches outside the zone, right? And that number has gone down in all three of these seasons for Morrell, and he's swinging more inside the zone. And that's very much by design. They don't care if he swings early in the count as long as they're at pitches in the zone. So they've just got him looking, look strike zone, guess your pitch. He's really good at guessing curveball. Sometimes, you know, but just look in the zone. And Corey Seager doesn't see a lot of pitches. We're so used to, like, the idea being make sure you see a lot of pitches. It doesn't work for everybody. And it doesn't work for Morrell, just telling him, like, look for a pitch in the zone. Well, you just concentrate in the zone and then swing really hard. And if you hit it, good things are going to happen. That seems to be working really well for him right now.
The natural power is just different. You know, it's not singular. There are guys with better, sure, but I mean it's elite, man. And I don't mean to bring it up like this because it was the first time that we had the real conversation about it. But remember, we were like, "Is this guy a star?"
Yeah.
It still feels I shut you down.
I shut you down on that, didn't I?
Yeah, well, it's still – yes, and it still feels to me, but it's really hard to be a star if you're a DH. Like, you got to be like a 40-homer guy if you're a DH.
Well, did you see the tag last night on the Bellinger throw?
I did.
That was well executed.
I know.
We always talk about Javi. It wasn't quite one of Javi's fancy tags that Shane loved so much.
He's a great tagger, Shane.
Really tremendous. Fast tagger. And his career is going to fall off just like Javi's crack-ass career fell off.
Check Javi's numbers. Check Javi's numbers on the
air.
I think they're
four.
Bad.
Yeah, they're bad. They're bad.
He hasn't had a hit since Nam.
I think it's a little better. I thought it was a little better, but I could be wrong. But anyway.
And the average age of the Pirates pitching staff, too.
Yeah, if you would check on that, I'd really appreciate it.
Yeah, 28. I think we did that already.
28. Yeah, 28.
34 for the Cardinals.
And no, it's still bad. Still bad on Javi. I'm very wrong.
Hold on, OPS. He's only got a negative four OPS plus. League average is 100, right, Danny?
Yeah. He's got five hits in 33 at bats.
Maybe we need Scott and Davenport to subtract the numbers hit against the White Sox when all the Sox fans boo him for no reason.
Yes!
And see how he'd be doing then.
Guilty of remembering that.
Five minus sure. two is yeah. That's
but anyway.
Oh wait, help. He's slugging 152. That's high.
You got to factor in the park factors, too.
Sure. Yeah, it's America's
not,
big.
It's not indicative. Yeah.
Oh, he's on the team until 2028. That's good. He's a free agent in 2028. Good for you, Detroit.
Chris Bryant and Javi Baez have two of the worst contracts in all of baseball.
Screw you, Benetti. Enjoy it.
Yeah. But Morel, a star.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. I love that that you still remember that conversation.
Of course I remember it, because I wanted to call a guy, and you were like, big swinging baseball guy over here, be like, oh, sure. He's not a star.
Sure.
He's not a star.
You know what?
I don't even know if he's a pro.
I was drinking the Kool-Aid about him being positionless, and that still may end up being the case as a DH, but I'm enjoying – the approach is smarter. Look, man, the undercurrent on a lot of this stuff this year – is me pointing a thumb at myself, not towards others like you. That's right. Your move with the thumb point.
Yeah, yeah, famously.
As you established yesterday. I was smitten with some David Ross stuff that I find myself less smitten with. And I'm realizing this guy's better. This guy's better.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. But
also, the guy who overachieved with the Brewers every year and no resources is better.
But Danny,
that's surprising.
I've always thought that like a little bit of a healthy exchange and a back and forth, a push-pull between manager and front office is good. And there still is. Yeah, there still is. It's just at a different level of nuance and a different level of organizational thought.
You just generally speaking, you want the smartest people that you could possibly hire, right? General rule of hiring. That's not to say that David Ross not smart. It is to say that counsel's smarter, right? That's I think you hire the smartest guy who's a manager in baseball.
Yeah, I don't think manager's that simple. I don't think it is. Look, Ozzie Guillen's smart as hell, Jim Leland's smart as hell, but neither of them you would think as sort of classically book smart or organizationally holistic. I mean, you got to be a badass leader who's comfortable telling the truth too. That's just not about smart. And Ross was all of that.
Definitely.
And I was very enamored with that, as were a lot of people. So it's not just smartest. It's smartest with the ability to lead the room and hold everybody together.
Booger McFarland for Poles position should be fascinating on the state of the Bears and the high-profile LSU prospects. Parkins and Spiegel on the score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.